Thank you again to everybody that's read, that's helped us open a meeting. Take this opportunity to welcome those that have joined us since we first started. And I'd like to extend a warm welcome to any visitors that we have with us tonight. Joining us for, and a huge welcome to any newcomers that might be with us. And we hope you're going to hear something that's going to encourage you to keep coming back. The format of this meeting is we are a speaker meeting. Our speaker is going to share their experience, strength and hope with us for about the next 40 or 45 minutes, whatever they're comfortable with. And it falls to me to introduce our speaker. So I met this person actually only this week, I think. And I've been asked to share in their meeting, and we got talking after the meeting, and I thought, wow, this is an interesting woman. I would really like to get her to come and share. She very kindly agreed. I know very little about Beth, other than she's been clean a while. I liked what she was sharing, I liked what to say. So without further ado, I'm going to ask Beth to share her experience, strength and hope with us. So Beth, over to you. The floor is yours.
Thank you, Steve. Hi, everybody. Addict named Beth.
Hi, Beth.
Hey, hi, Beth. Hi, welcome.
Beth. Hi, Beth.
Hey. Hello, welcome.
Hi, Beth. Hi, Beth.
Hi. Hi. I'm used to the other format that we have going, and we can wave and everything. So I'm just sitting here in my chair and, you know, been praying that my higher power, Great Mystery, will help me just share a message for you from my higher power. And because the story and the share that I have is from me and my experience and my strength and my hope. And, you know, it's my anniversary was last month. It was June 20th. And I got clean on a Tuesday on June 20th, 1989. And, you know, I reflected back like in May, it was May 17th. I believe it was a Monday, and I was in a meeting, and that's when I realized that that was the beginning of the end. I had been in a car accident and things spiraled out, and you know, I didn't know what was going on. I knew there was something wrong with me for many, many years. And, I grew up in a home, a nice home. I had parents. There was no divorce. I had a brother. And I know at a very young age, I ate all the vitamins and lied. I used all the Band-Aids and lied. And my parents screamed and yelled a lot at each other. And it was pretty bad. And I remember the paddlings and stuff that we got and the lying and and at 5, I was diagnosed with learning disabilities. And at 9, I was the identified patient in my family. So they sent me to a psychiatrist by myself. And because I wouldn't talk, he used to buy me cookies. And because I would go after dinner, they would drop me off. And I would go in by myself at 9. And I wouldn't talk, so he bought me dolls. So I would, because he thought I would talk to the dolls. And I would talk in my head. And I remember him saying that. And he goes, well, aren't you going to talk? I said, yeah, I am, in my head. And I don't even remember. I remember, I guess I was 22 maybe by the time they stopped sending me or I stopped going or I went, whatever. I was already using by then. And at 15, my dad met somebody. I was 15. He introduced me to her. She is still my other mom and his girlfriend up until the day he died. And my mom knew that. And this woman is the woman that loved me like a mom is supposed to love their child and children. And to this day, I call her and I hear, hi, my honey, how are you? And when I call my mom, I hear, oh. So I didn't come from loving parents because they didn't know how, because they didn't know how, because their parents didn't know how, and then they were not taught. And so all of that and all of the rage of my dad and all of that, I started using because it was probably peer pressure. And then I believe in what I know is that I used because it was much better than what I was living with and the home I was living in. And you know, things got bad. Things got worse. Last time I had my nose broken, I was 21. I've had been beaten up by guys. I started using, things got worse. And what has been said to me over the years is that using was the best way to survive my household. And so think, believe, when I was 18, I remember wanting to stop. I was already 18 and I knew there was something wrong. And I tried to stop and I didn't know what to do. And I didn't get clean till I was 29. And things got really bad. And I think we know, I don't really like to get into all of that because we could, you could lay, you could have your, this is the only example I have, a long table and your family sitting there, but now interchange the heads with the people from my family and it's all the same. You know, it's all the same. It's uncomfortable. When they used to say the word family in meetings, when I first got clean, I used to want to leave. I went to area service and I had to stop. Because it felt like I was sitting with my entire dysfunctional family within a very compacted air little room, and I couldn't get out, and it was too much. It was too painful. And so when I got here, I thought I had done such a great job with my life, and there was a guy that I met, and he didn't want to get high with me, didn't want to have sex with me, and I thought there was something wrong with him. And he said, "No, there's something wrong with you, and you're an addict." And I didn't even know what it meant. What I do know is that when I worked in a hospital when I was 23, I worked there for a few years, and I remember seeing a friend of mine's name in the psychiatric unit. And then I remember running into this guy who was the town horror show, and he would walk by me, and I said his name. I said, "Is that you?" He goes, "Oh yeah." I said, "What are you doing here?" He was going to a meeting, a different fellowship, and wow, he looked like a human being. I didn't know what it meant. And so I moved when I was 26. I moved down to Florida and I continued, you know, there was no geographical cure. There was nothing. Things continued. And so this guy, I called him and he said, "I have a pamphlet for you." And I said, in my disgust, "Okay, fine." And I remember I went and got it. I remember filling it out or answering the questions. And I said, "Yeah, I missed like two of them," and with an attitude. And he said, "Well, here's a phone number and call it." And that was June 20th, 1989, and it was a Tuesday. And I hadn't used that day, but I remember how I felt, and I felt horrible. I felt like I wanted to rip my skin off. I remember how disgusted I was with myself. I remember sitting, I had a roommate, I remember sitting in my room, and I just remember just not wanting to be alive. And so I made that phone call, and it was like late afternoon. And I got a phone call back because we didn't have cell phones back then. So I remember my phone rang and I answered the phone, and it was a man. And he told me, he said, you know, he, I don't know what he said, but he gave me information on where to go for a meeting. And I said, okay. And I wrote it down. And I remember being in the car driving to the meeting. And now I remember walking into the building and I remember sitting down. It was in a church, the Blue Lake Group. I was on Hillsborough and military, I think, in Florida. And I remember being in there, and I remember they were reading. I remember there were people sitting around. I remember some guy flipping his hands. And at the end, they said something, and everybody kind of said, yeah. And I got up, and I guess that's when I got my white key tag. And I kind of jumped in everybody's back pockets. I remember getting phone numbers and writing them down, and we used to go to meetings, and we went to the other fellowship a lot. And I remember we were told not to talk and that we didn't belong there. And I remember I wanted to get a sponsor, and she asked me how I did some of these other substances, and I said, well, to get wasted, of course. Oh, well, you're also, and it didn't make sense. Narcotics Anonymous was the only place that I felt like I was home. And so before I had 30 days, I decided to stay in Narcotics Anonymous, and I got a temporary sponsor. And she said, don't pray to your childhood God. And that's something I've never forgotten. And I kept going to meetings, and I met people, and we would call each other, and we would go to meetings, and we would go out to dinner afterwards. And then we would call each other when we got home. And then we would fall asleep. And in the morning, I remember waking up and putting the receiver back on the phone. And then I'd go to work, and then we'd get home, call each other as soon as possible, some of us women. And then we'd meet each other at the meeting again. And, you know, and I was amazed that people would show up. I was amazed that, like, okay, meet me here. Here's the address. And there were people there. You know, I remember going to beginners meetings, and there were people there. And there was a woman sharing one day, and I remember her sharing something. And I don't even know if I turned to somebody or I said out loud. I said, oh, my God, she's sharing things that I did. How could she say that out loud? And then I remember saying, well, maybe I'm not so bad. Maybe that I'm not so bad. That if she can say this out loud, and she can say that in front of people, that maybe I'm just in the right place. You know, maybe that what I did is okay, even though I don't feel okay about it, that maybe I can just keep coming back here. You know, and these are the things about our readings that are so important. And, you know, I've been to meetings even recently where people are joking around about the readings and joke. And you know what? To me, it's not a joke. These readings, I wanted to know I didn't even have 30 days. How did they put this on paper? I just heard somebody say it the same way I believe it and said it. How did you guys know? How do you guys know this? You know, how did you get in my head? Because we're addicts, and I didn't know this at the time. So I just kept coming back. You know, I kept going to meetings and meetings and meetings. Remember, I'd write them down on a calendar, and I had a job. I had to do a little bit of travel throughout Florida. And I was always available. I was always able to get to a meeting. And on weekends, I remember I did 120 and 90. And now I do sometimes 3 to 4 to 5 a day. Even at 32 years clean, I do a lot of meetings because it's right here. And so I kept coming back, and I got a sponsor, and she was busy getting married. So I got another sponsor, and I met some of the people at this point that Steve, that you know, that we spoke about. Steve knows some of the people down here in Florida that I know. And so I kept coming back. I got a roommate in recovery, and of course I got a boyfriend because that's what they told us not to do. So I did. And so I had a boyfriend most of my first year, which I now understand makes it just a lot harder to stay clean when you're focused on somebody else and not yourself. So it was kind of rough. And, you know, I was already working steps and writing steps. And I used to call my sponsor every day and meet her at meetings. And I remember driving to a meeting, and I remember being stuck in traffic and thinking, I've got to get to that meeting, because I don't believe in getting to meetings late. I left very few early. Only when there were times I've had to do certain things, I've had to leave early over the years. But I really always, that's what I was taught. You sit down, you shut up, and you get to meetings, and you get there early, and you get phone numbers, and you reach out, and you meet people, and you get a home group, and you work the steps, and or die, motherfucker, is what they said. And so I went to meetings, and I did what they said. I did what all of you told me in the meetings to do. And sometimes I made friends, and sometimes I didn't. And sometimes people were nice, and sometimes they weren't. And sometimes I had roommates that were not nice and stole my jewelry and stole things that my grandparents gave me. And you know what? I stayed clean through that too. And I've changed friends, and I've changed places I lived, and I stayed clean, and I kept going to meetings. And they say, stick with the winners. And those are the people that are staying clean. And I remember wanting to use, and I remember somebody coming back from using. And I remember him sharing. And you know what? I said, thank you. I said, thank you, because he told me what it was like. And I didn't use. I didn't use that day. And I just kept coming back. And then I remember sitting at that red light. And at that red light, I heard a song come on the radio. And what I heard Mick Jagger say was, you can't always get what you want, but if you try sometimes, you just might find you get what you need. And I internalized that first step. And that first step was so important, because, you know, I understood I had made that surrender. I felt that surrender. I was done. When I got here, I was done. I have not chosen to use. I have felt the need and want to use, but I have not, because I continue to surrender to the program, not to the drugs, not to the disease of addiction. And so then I learned about the second step and the void, and how that big dark hole that I could walk into, because it's that big. And I learned about getting not just a higher power, but a power greater than me. And I had an opportunity to find something that would work for me. And that higher power has changed over the years. And it has been arms wrapping around me. It's been sitting at the beach, because I live in Florida, and sitting at the beach with my feet in the sand and the sound of the ocean and the warmth of the sun, and sitting there and feeling that and being that. And that being a power greater than me, and listening to meetings and having people stay clean and watching what's going on. And that has been a power greater than me. And then I had a sponsor that said that her God, she was told, and passed this on to me, that she was told that her God believes that everything down here on earth is perfect. So she was told to talk out loud to her God, and tell her God what was going on. And I actually still continue to talk out loud to my higher power. I say great mystery, great spirit, great mystery, creator, Tunkashla. It's a red road. It's a Native American path of belief. And so I'm just not going to, I'm going to try to just do that here. I don't usually, but you know, it's because I have to always change the word God to something that I believe. So it's all of everything. And that's how I talk. So I'm just going to try to put that out there. So when I did the second step, I remember changes were happening. I remember in my second year also jumping out of my bed, screaming at my pillow, like the disease of addiction was getting bigger and bigger and bigger in the dark. It just got darker, darker, darker. And I remember having to really rely on my prayers. And at that time it was God, and then it became Goddess and God and all this other stuff. So my higher power has changed. I remember it being in my third step, and I'll get back to two, shrinking something down, inhaling and exhaling in my hands, and then throwing everything up and exhaling and releasing stuff, people, you know, turning it over. So in the second step, I remember changing things, and things were changing. My life was changing, and my feet not feeling grounded. And I felt like I was, somebody picked me up by a clothespin and hung my shoulders with clothespins on a clothesline. You know, and I was just waving in the wind. And that's when I realized and knew and understood and learned that I need to pray. I need to have that God. I need to have that connection. I need to have that power greater than myself, so that I could be guided to what's next. Because what's familiar is going back, and it's not that far behind us, you know, and not at that time. So I continued to pray and find a higher power, find a God, you know, whatever it was that I could rely on, that I could trust, that I could believe in, and that would believe in me, that would love me, because I didn't feel loved. And it took a really long time. And very honestly, it's only been since the last year and a half that I feel more love in my life than I ever have. And, so, you know, I got through that dark time, and I continued with a different sponsor. And then by this time, I don't know, I don't even know. I had 4 years, 3 years when I got married, and he used to introduce me as his future ex-wife. And so that came to fruition a few years later. Even before that, though, I remember being, I'm sorry, my brain goes, learning disabilities and sequencing don't work. So as a friend of mine said, I don't know if she made it in here, but she used to say to me that she recently got told, because of her learning disabilities growing up, that she talks from the middle. And that is so awesome, because I laughed. She had been ridiculed by it, and I laughed. I said, oh my God, that explains my life. And that's why I find it hard to share in meetings, because things go like Ricochet Rabbit, man. They're just all over the place. So that's a relief to be able to say that and know I can go back and forth. And So the third step of turning it over to that power greater than myself and the care of and all that stuff and the hands and the arms and, you know, and all that stuff and inhaling and exhaling and letting go. And I remember when I first learned about this and I kept calling one of my friends in recovery saying, how do you do it? What do you do? What do you do? And then the belief finally came that I could lay on my couch and I would be watched over by my higher power. But when I got up and I moved my feet and I did the footwork and I continued to grow and I continued to change, that I would be supported in my effort, And that has stayed with me for the, that I think I got that in my second year. And so turning it over, the belief in the second year, because I was already working the steps, already working on my fourth step, already sharing that stuff. And I guess I got clean 89, I think 92, I got married at the end of 92 and I had moved into a different area, a little bit north of where I am and tried to make friends and, you know, women just, it's tough to make new friends. And I continued with my steps and my marriage and things started to fall apart when he started using, and my daughter was still in diapers and she found stuff on the floor and that broke up and I had to leave. And, you know, I took a handful of clothes and stuck them out of a laundry basket after I had been thrown out of the house by a using addict. And life changed and priorities change. And I got through that too. And I remember sharing my fifth step, getting my sixth step list. And that hurt like hell because somebody was questioning and telling me that I needed to look at my survival tools. And I was like, what, are you fucking kidding me? Like, I need these. I need this stuff. You can't take this away. And my Get Smart doors, walls, concrete, steel doors, steel girders, steel beams, you know, you name it. You know, somebody wanted to take my walls down and that was painful. And it was painful at 2 weeks clean when somebody said to me, gave me a hug and said, we're going to love you till you can love yourself. And now you guys wanted to take my walls, wanted me to let go of my walls, wanted me to let go of, sorry, excuse me. Okay, shh, it's okay, Jesse. So, and I was like, wow, you know, it hurt because I was looking at me again. And then I was working for a woman that helped me identify all that nastiness and horribleness that I had in me, because this was the nastiest, horrible, most horrible person I had ever met in my life. And I watched her and identified all of my character defects and how painful that was. And it took quite a few more four steps and rounds through the steps. I've been through the steps formally four times and I've written many, many fourth steps. I remember watching a guy in a meeting saying, I ain't going to do my fourth step. And eventually I watched him use, and then he died. And so the four comes after three. Four just comes after three. That's all. We've already done it. We just write it down. We look at our patterns, and then we get that sixth step. And, you know, it is just survival. And so with the tools of the program that I started collecting, I was able to learn about defects and assets. When I got a new sponsor, I stayed on six and seven for a year. And I made a little – we used to have these places you go and you make ceramics. And by this time I had gotten a new sponsor. So my daughter was little and I wrote on little cards, the asset and the defect. And I would pull one every day. And my daughter would say, Mommy, what are we today? And I had to give her the asset because last thing I wanted was her to have the defect, you know? And so it helped me become aware of that. And that had, I guess like second or maybe third time through, no, maybe second time through with this sponsor that I had her as a sponsor for 24 years. And by now I was already changed jobs, changing life, changing places where I lived. I was a single mom. And I knew before my daughter was born, because I was clean and I had gone to school for early childhood education. And this woman who's my other mom was the director of a preschool and just did things differently than I had been brought up with. And I knew I'd have a great opportunity to be a really good mom. And my daughter and I are really, really close and I love her so much. And so, you know, I did all that and I took time out of relationships and worked on myself and some of my walls came down, and, you know, life goes on and things happen. And then I remember being in a convention and listening to an A-step speaker. And I was like, whoa, that's like real honest. That's like a whole newfound honesty. I'm sorry. I want to go back to six and seven. I can't go past seven. Seven, I remember hearing this guy in a convention. And he was talking about that we seek to understand before being understood, and where he got his defects and shortcomings from. And he talked about his family. And here was that word family that I wanted to just puke on myself and run out. And I remember feeling that even in that, that convention. But he talked about the things that he got from his family. And that's where I learned why seven is so important, because it's the family of origin that we get this stuff. And then that's where the survival tools come from. And that's how we protect ourselves. And what we protect ourselves from is the disease of addiction and our lives and all that using stuff that comes from it. You know, we may start using, and then we use because we have to cover up how we feel, and then we have to cover up how we feel. And then the disease of addiction just takes over. I said, here's a shovel. Keep on digging. And so seven has been really, really, really important. And I've done a lot of work on the family of origin stuff and healing myself and healing my inner child and finding my inner children. At first, there were lots of them. You know, the one standing there with her arms crossed, tapping her foot, and the one with the finger up in the air, and the one, this one, and the one hiding. I worked for a couple after I got divorced, and in 97, I got divorced, and I remember working for these people, and they used to scream and yell at each other, and I remember having, like, I was like, oh my God, I was like paralyzed in fear, because the little kid inside me was hiding behind the furniture inside of me. And I remember going to court a lot, and I had to talk to the kid inside of me so she wouldn't be afraid of the person that was screaming and yelling on the stand, because he didn't want to pay child support and he didn't want to, you know, and he was using and all this stuff. And I remember fear. I remember a lot of fear. And, you know, and I always felt fear. And then finally, I remember being able to stand up, and I remember, you know, my arms weren't dragging as much on the ground. And I remember being, you know, there for my daughter and having a job and switching a job and getting a better job and having a better life. And then eight, you know, making that list and making those amends. There was an amends that I made that like came about early. And I know when we first get clean, we want to explain this to everybody and we want to tell everybody, and it's in the steps for a reason and it's in order for a reason. I remember this, and I don't even, Jimmy is my ex-husband's name, and he passed away in 2008, and when my daughter was 14 and a half, we buried him. So I remember we were sitting with my mom, and something happened, and she said she had been to this design school when I was in junior high school. And the night before, I didn't even know this. And the night before her end of year project was due, I stabbed it with a knife. I stabbed her project and her book with a knife and sliced all the pages. And she had to stay up all night and redo it. And I didn't know. And I didn't remember. And she told both of us that. And I had a few years clean at that time. And again, family stuff really hurts. And so I apologized. And so it was painful to know, because so as much as it hurt that I hurt my mom, what I know is that all of that pain and hurt was inside me, for the way that she grew up, that she passed on to me. And so I felt it just now, because it hurt, but it's the pain that I've carried of having the mom that I have. I've had that sponsor for many years, and I used to tell her I was born into the wrong family. And because it was just too much. And what I have since found out is that my dad gave my other mom money to take care of me and do things with me because he knew my mom wouldn't. And so that amends came early on, and there were other amends to make, different things that we do that we are now accountable and responsible for. You know, the family stuff continues. I continue, and I'm willing. I've always been willing to do the work. And then to take a look at my part and continue to take a look at my life, you know, we have step 10. And over the years, I've done it, I've not done it. I do it more now. When I was 13, I learned transcendental meditation. And I meditated for many years. I was 13. It was 1973. And my mom took me, a friend, and my dad, and we learned how to meditate. And I meditated a lot through my addiction. I started doing it. I stopped. I started doing it again when I was clean. My first few years, I stopped, and I picked it back up again a year and a half ago. And it's life-changing. And it's amazing how I'm an inline speed skater, long distance skater, walking, exercising, this, that, everything. I'm thinking walking, all these other ways to be in prayer and meditation. And you know what? What I'm learning now is it's for me, what's working is the quiet. I've done Inipi sweat lodges for many, many, many years, actually for about 24 years. And I had one in my backyard. I was doing ceremonies in my backyard until I sold my house 5 years ago. And again, I go to other people's places, but I've been able to be in prayer and meditation for hours at a time, hours and hours and hours. We sing, we pray, we give of ourselves. It's hot. We pray, we give of ourselves for others. That is what the ceremonies are. We are giving of ourselves for others. So I've learned how, again, to continue to pray and pray and pray. In the morning, I just like I probably sometimes I'm I said to myself this week, I probably need to set a timer because my prayers just last forever. And then I go into a meditation, and then I do my formal quiet meditation and in the mornings. And you know, it's changed over the years, but I didn't realize that I had been doing meditation, prayer and meditation for all those years. And being in these ceremonies that have been peaceful and loving and giving. And because there's other things that happen on this earth path that, you know, we just have these human things that show up. And you know, I used to get screamed and yelled at by a boss, and then you know, I left and I opened a company, and then he tried to sue me. And you know, I've moved. I just moved back. I've had homes. I've had boyfriends, and you know, all this what I call earth path stuff. And all that earth path stuff, I just get to remind myself that over the years I've used little buzzwords like I'm on a spiritual journey. I'm on a spiritual journey because it gets me out of the pain of some of these things, you know, the relationships or things that I haven't worked out or loss. Ugh. So you know, it's been amazing to be able to give back spiritual awakenings. In the 12th step, in our 12th step, I like it. It works how and why. It talks about how we all have the same thing. This is supposed to be a place of there where we don't judge each other because of that, but we do. We know we do. I've always been saying for many years, we can inventory somebody, but we don't get to judge. We can inventory a situation, a friendship, a meeting. We can inventory what's going on, but we don't get to judge, and we do. So, you know, to be open-minded about that, to be loving, it's taken me a really long time because I don't come from that. We don't come from that. Since I moved back June of 20 to an area where I was living, I'm closer to my daughter. I'm in between my mom and my daughter. It's just June 27th, my dad passed away. He was my buddy, not for many years, and then again for many years. And his health was really bad the last 8 years of his life, and I was part of helping to take care of him. And I guess the last 17 years were better for him and I. The last 13 years were better for him and I. Those last few years we were like just best buds. And he was the rageaholic, and I got it. God, he used to hit really. It was bad. And my aunt told me when he got older, he would calm down, and he did. And then he got really ill and stuff. And he's the one that said, open your own company. He was my cheerleader. He was the parent that loved me. And it's been really painful to be with my mom, left with my mom. There was a woman that shared in a meeting a year ago, I hate my mom. And everything opened up for me then to start doing some healing. And my mom is around. I go to her on Sundays. I'm packing her, getting rid of stuff, helping her pack to be moved into assisted living. And that's what she's chosen. And I'm there. She's not nice because she wasn't brought up nice. Even though everybody loves her, I'm the one that she's not nice to. And it's not because it's not my way. It's just her way. And so I get that. And I'm fortunate to have another mom. And so I show up for my mom. I'm letting my walls down with my mom. I'm coming from a different place of love with my mom. Do I love her? No, I don't love her. I'm finding it hard to love her. However, I can be loving. And that's the best that I can do, because almost a year and a half ago, I couldn't even be around her. I thought the best thing we had was a pandemic, because I'm a half hour from her and I didn't have to go see her. And my daughter, like I said earlier, my daughter and I are really close, because I did everything the opposite. I did everything different because I had the opportunity to grow and change and be different. I had the opportunity to do everything the opposite of what was done in my life. And I've been ridiculed by my family for that. I've been ridiculed and because I'm in a program. Yes, they called it a cult. They did all that stuff. They tried to tear me down. Of course, my ex-husband who was using was trying to tear me down, even while we were married, that, you know, I was going to meetings and different things. And that's okay. You know, I've stayed clean. I remember somebody told me when I had caught him using, this woman said, you know, what you're sharing in meetings is making us really uncomfortable. And I turned to this other woman and she said, if you weren't sharing this, you'd be out using. And when I got my anniversary, I guess my 31, it was my 31. Yeah. My daughter was here in the house and I was on a virtual platform. And after the meeting, she said, you know, mom, and she didn't know her dad was a using addict until 5 years ago when I sold my house and there were papers and things that she got from like her growing up stuff and teachers and things. And she read a bunch of stuff and she couldn't talk to me. And she called me and she said, I don't know how you did it, but thank you for being so strong and showing me that you could be so strong. And because I never told her about her dad, and I had gotten some outside help, and it wasn't my place. It was my place to teach her how to be careful and how to be safe. And so she apologized for all of the stuff that she had said to me that came from her dad. And, you know, it bonded us, I think, even more. And she said that, she told me, she said that she didn't use because she just knew, because of stuff that she had heard over the years. And you know, she hugged me and we love each other, you know. And how much better for me does it get, because I don't have that. Like when my grandson, when Olivia just turned 6, when she was a baby, Benjamin is 8. So when we had to take them somewhere and we had my mom's car, and he wrote all over the back with a crayon, and I saw it. And my daughter says, oh, don't worry about it. I said, no. You have me for a mom. You don't have my mom for a mom. We need to get that off the back door. We eventually told my dad, and I did have some pictures. I think he could see at the time when we told him. He couldn't see anymore. And you know, so the life I have, I'm in a really small place, from a house to a bigger house to a really small place. And you know, and I work, and I got to watch my grandkids. I have 3 of them, and I got to watch them for COVID, and I go to meetings now, and I've met so many people. The benefit, the beauty of having a recovery program, Narcotics Anonymous, is amazing, because I get to keep growing. I get to keep changing. I got here at 29. I'm 61. you know, I work out, I bodybuild with these guys at the gym. They said, hey, join us. I said, okay. So I went back. I had an injury. I had to go back to the gym during COVID, with latex gloves and mask and everything. But, you know, I've been working out with these guys now, and I have a great time with them. And I come home and I have my dog and I go to meetings all the time. And I go to this one meeting. I was invited to this meeting over a year ago. I'm amazed at the love this guy. His name is Ralph. And I've met some of the people that have been here and are here. And, you know, like, he talks about letting go of fear. And somebody else said to me, not him, but they said, what would you do if you were not afraid? And I see my mom that lives in fear and says, she says prayers, but she doesn't understand what a higher power is and to have a real connection. And so I watch that with compassion, even little bit of compassion that I can find for her. And my compassion is growing for her because of the way she grew up, and she's not probably not able to change now, but how bad things were. And that I can have love in my heart. Do I love her? No, but I feel love for her, and that I can love and I can respond with faces and these things on our phones and tell people I love them. And I didn't even have that a year and a half ago. It was there inside, but I was still so afraid to let this stuff out, you know, because there's been so many wrong people in my life. And now I have so many people in my life. I go to meetings, and I was going to this one meeting in the morning. And like, I remember asking the sponsor I had, like, where do these people come from? You know, so many of them with so much time. And I just switched sponsors because he's got more of what I want. And yes, he's a he. And I asked him to sponsor me, and he's got more time. And he shares with me, and he's open. And our conversations have been for an hour. And, you know, I'm getting the time that I need, and I'm finding more peace of having a new connection with a new sponsor. And I'm having love, just feeling love. I do talk to people. I'm trying not to talk to people because I try to help people and it really backfires a lot. But just being able to say hello is enough. You know, not trying to help everybody is better. Because my dad was like that. And oh my gosh, I'm trying to back off on that part. But just reaching out, sharing experience, strength, and hope, sharing my life with people, sharing time and energy with people, being loving towards my grandkids that my daughter let me. Before I had moved and then moved back, I never got to watch my grandkids. And she left them with me for 5 months, 60 hours a week while she had to work. And I had some business. I was able to get through those first that first year, I guess, of COVID, or 9 months. And I had them for five months, and she left them with me. And now I have the little one 3 to 4 days a week. And you know, it's about love. It's about loving them. I did get angry at the little one. She didn't clean up her toys. I was like, oh God, Beth, please, you know, be careful. Just be careful. You know, they are love, and we are love. And life has changed again. I'm not going to be able to breathe here in a second. Life has changed again because I'm meeting more people, more like-minded people. I have a drum circle. I do on my, I have a friend that we do a drum circle on our Red Road, and because we can't get to ceremonies. And so we do that on Monday nights, and I meet friends in meetings, and I have more people in my life. And I think, having gone through the steps, going through the steps, working the steps, and then living the steps live through me. So what I can do and what I can share is my experience, strength, and hope, but it's my life. This is my life. I mean, finished my 20s, my 30s, my 40s, my 50s, and now I'm 61, and I have all these years of living and opportunity to be better, to get better, to keep growing and evolving to another, to just being a better person and encouraging people to be you, you know. And recently, like, there was somebody that was really, really not nice. And I talked to somebody else about it. I mean, I got some really hurtful chat messages in a message, in a meeting. And this person's been doing it for years. It really hurt. It was not nice. And my daughter was like, well, just tell. And I was like, no, you can't do that. I don't want to do that. And, you know, we allow people to be who they are. We allow people to do what they do. I think we have a responsibility, though, to be honest. And again, we pick and choose who we want to share our emotions with. So just because we're clean doesn't mean we're healthy. We can find the people that we want in our lives. We can, and we find each other, like water seeks its own level. And so I am just like, I got past the hurt. I got past being upset. I didn't even get angry. When I had a year, my dad said, are you people allowed to get angry? And I'm like, Dad, we don't have to, because we have steps. We have tools. We have ways of doing this. And he had the serenity prayer inside the medicine cabinet, which I thought was hysterical. So, you know, and I taught him, not taught, I shared with him what the first step is, and the first part of the serenity prayer, and the second step, and then the third step, and how that's our serenity prayer. Those are our steps, and those are our tools. And just by having that, and then going through each situation, and finding our part, and not acting out, and continuing to grow, and continuing to look at ourselves, and not with a baseball bat, because we judge ourselves so harshly. And you know, if I can continue to do this, and help others, that's what I'm here for. I really feel that this is what I'm supposed to do, and more so every day, and more so to be present for my daughter and my mom, and to have my other mom that loves me, you know, which she shared a lot with me and still is around for me. So I just want to say thank you. And thank you, Tunkashla. Thank you, Grand Mystery, for this life. And thank you, everybody. That's it. Thanks.